Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a guy who has hands less sweaty than Paris, but I think that's most of us. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Very excited to get into a very exciting night on Big Brother Canada. Got a very fun panel here to talk about everything on what was a bit of a Johnny coming out party in terms of the TV show following him staying in the house this week. We're going to talk about it all. From the esteemed live feed correspondents, please welcome back to the podcast, Melissa Denny. Melissa, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited to talk about the controversy of the episode, which was Johnny dipping fries in his Frosty.
That's apparently a big deal. That's a faux pas.
Well, no, I love doing it, but apparently the internet is very divided as to whether that's acceptable.
Yes. Okay. As things go on the internet. And of course, a man never embroiled in a controversy. Please give it up for the host of the RHAP B&B and much more, Mike Bloom.
Thank you, Rob. I'm so happy you chose me like Maddie chose Paris. Really similar relationship we have going on.
Very similar relationship. We chose each other, and here we are, ready to talk about everything here tonight on a Monday night, last podcast before I take off for Boston for this week's live know-it-alls. And we've got the chat room open here on robiswebsite.com. You can use hashtag RHAP on Twitter to send in a question. And also, of course, in the chat room, you can post a question, colon, and then go ahead and let Scott St. Pierre know that you got a question for the show, and we will get to those later on here tonight. But we got a lot to talk about here as we discuss Johnny winning HOH this week, and then, of course, Johnny putting up the showmance, Dayla, are up on the block. So let's get into all that. But really, I want to start with a meta question here for you, Melissa, in terms of that, was this episode what you were waiting for? As someone who has watched Johnny on the live feeds all season long, I know that you and Taryn and Matt were all very upset on Thursday night with what we saw in the episode, where there was almost no mention of how Johnny was going to pull this off after Taryn went into in great detail. Hours and hours were devoted to Johnny's every single step of the way and how masterful it was that he was able to take himself off of the block. Did you feel like that tonight did any justice to what he was able to accomplish last week?
I think it did him some justice as to his current HOH reign, but I don't think they still gave him any credit, really, or enough credit for saving himself last week and the work, the amount of work that he put into it. And if you want to see what really happened, there's a Reddit edit going around about how Johnny did it and how Johnny saved himself. And they basically like detail it out, like 3 days before eviction, 2 days before eviction, like what he was doing. And it's really not a long video. So if you want to know what went on, you really should check that out.
Okay. Mike, first off, how's everything going for you? You doing well?
Doing well, keeping my head above water as we swim through not only the podcast, but I'm also doing some new stuff, some TV coverage for the Tribeca Film Festival. So
what? Got a lot of stuff. Well, Mike, this is huge news.
So I'm barely holding on to the giant candy volcano that is spurting jelly in my face, but yes. I lick it off like a champ.
What are you covering for the Tribeca Film Festival? The Big Brother Canada 6?
Yes, of course. There was a great panel. We had Hamza, we had Veronica, Jesse straight from Coachella. Like, it was a who's who, literally, because I had no idea who these people were. I'm covering...
Andrew? Did you get Andrew?
Oh, no, Andrew couldn't make it. He was... they had to, the plane company decided,
Rosina?
Like, okay,
so you get Rosina.
Oh yeah. She was handing out butter chicken in the audience. It was really just a fantastic event, but I'm doing a bunch
Mike,
of Tribeca.
I brought you something.
Yes. That voice will always be in my head. Whenever I need to know that I can do it, I just hear screaming in the top of my head now.
Can you believe it? Johnny put the French fries in the Frosty.
Listen, I think to the point that you guys made on Thursday, considering all of Andrew's heaven picks have become fallen angels, Rosina might have put a blessing onto this group of people with her screamed words of wisdom.
Yes, maybe. All right, sorry. Sorry. And of course, Mike Bloom is also covering Westworld for the Jay and Jack Podcasting Network, correct?
Absolutely. And like the butterfly. Johnny has a very Dolores-like edit. He has taken control and he is ready to raise down hell upon the humans that have inflicted harm upon him.
Okay. So I want to also just have this meta conversation as well as we go along here tonight, because that we have this disconnect that we, you know, I tried to touch on this last week and I don't know if it came across in the right way, but the TV show has been a very different product than the live feeds. And I didn't mean to cast any dispersions onto what's going on the live feeds, which of course have been very interesting, but I felt like that the show has had a disconnect in terms of what we've seen from episode to episode, and it's been pretty disjointed in my mind. So at the center of everything for a while in the house has been Johnny. And now, Mike, I know you have paid very close attention to the TV show and have not seen as much of the live feeds. Did you get that the game that Johnny had been playing up until this point?
I mean, it's tough because I think, you know, Brent brought up a very good point at your roundtable last week about how Big Brother Canada especially really likes to focus on certain people to sort of rally around. And for some reason, maybe it's just because Johnny's gameplay, especially the first half of the game, was a little more under the radar, or because there were bigger characters to embrace, like your Hamzas and your Erikas, etc., that by the time you're gone, you're sort of left having to, in a good sense, backfill sort of all the stuff that Johnny has been doing. So that made things a little bit difficult this week. I mean, I don't know. I guess we should all embrace the best Big Brother Canada players in the world now, the Ding Dongs. I can't wait for the Canada versus US season. We finally, I know it's been theorized for years. We finally have the perfect matchup. It's taken so many years, but we're going to have the Ding Dongs versus Shannon and Elizabeth for the best North American Big Brother player ever. It's going to be a fantastic competition. So, yeah, I mean, I know you guys were theorizing about this. I really don't know what it was, because I've definitely been wrapping my head around why Johnny up until this point really hasn't gotten that much praise thrown on him. It's more so things like, look at this mistake he made, you know, casting a vote to save Erica. Now he's going to get in trouble for it. I'm wondering, is it something that is he not bringing that much personally in the DR? Is there something else going on that makes these other characters more viable, like your Allies and your Livs, who are definitely much more personable? I'm not entirely sure, but it does stink, because I think especially the move that Johnny played last week, I know there's been a lot of comparisons to Dan's funeral. I put out a question on Twitter about it, about how impressive is this, you know, from a spectrum comparison to Big Brother history. A lot of people were comparing it to similarly Vanessa digging her way out of the back door in season 17. So it's insane that as magnanimous of a move that it was, for one reason or another, it was not really shown, and everything was thrown onto the Ding Dong to the point of where you have Allie this episode be like, all the hard work that I personally did
and Liv saying, hey, Johnny, we didn't save you last week to not put Dayla on the block. So
it's an interesting situation. I'm still trying to like wrap my head around why this is happening. And I'm glad that we at least got like 10 seconds of Johnny, you know, sitting down on those beds. I totally agree with Melissa. Go to YouTube, check out how Johnny saved himself. It's a fantastic like 8.5 minute recap as to just the small conversations that Johnny had. But I do wonder if it's more of like a personality thing as to why the editors assign those certain events.
Melissa, I'd love to get your take on this, because I just want to be also abundantly clear. I think that Johnny is the best player in the game, and I don't even think it's close. I think that he is head and shoulders above the rest of the house. But yet we have not seen that depicted on the show until at least somewhat tonight. So why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it made sense up until this point to not really show him a lot, because he was trying to stay more in the background. And while he was kind of controlling some things, or, you know, making some moves behind the scenes, they weren't really what impacted whoever was going home. It wasn't that big of a deal. But this past week, it was all Johnny. And I thought for sure this is going to be the moment where the editors pick up on it and are like, we need to showcase this because it's amazing. And they didn't. And that was kind of confusing to me, because I feel like for example, Derek in Big Brother 16, I don't really feel like he was a huge part of the game in the beginning, just because we had so many other personalities. We had Devin, who, you know, he went out in a big ball of flames. Yeah. And we had all these other characters that we had to kind of get through first before we could really focus on Derek. And they really decided to like rally the edit around Derek's like fantastic gameplay. And so I think I was thinking that maybe that was the case here, which is like we have, you know, Hamza, we have Erica, we have all these big personalities that we need to kind of get through first in order to then switch to Johnny. And I think that the editors kind of just like didn't get to that second part of it where then they decide to focus on Johnny. And maybe now they will, because to be fair, it really looked like he was going home last week. But then on Thursday, you'd think that they'd want to show why he's now not going home. But, you know, I mean, it's really hard to say. I wish I could explain it, but it's a little disappointing.
Yeah, it's like going through Tinder and being like, all right, I'm gonna get all the big personalities out of the way. Let me get all these big dates going on. And then finally, like, okay, I can settle down with this person. This one's got good longevity. So, I mean, Johnny is a house husband for a reason. He's good for long term. Whereas, you know, Hamza might be good for like a one night stand before he causes chaos around your apartment.
Get out of this, Mike. We're three quarters of the way bloom here.
This was intel I got from the panel. Okay, it was a very pertinent question asked to the pre-jury members. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, Melissa, is it possible that the moves Johnny made happened too late in the week to be shown in the Thursday episode? Could that be part of the reason why they had this gold of Johnny pulling off this miracle comeback to stay in the house? Could that be why we didn't see it on Thursday?
No way. Because they were able to show Allie like doing her big moves. And I feel like it takes 5 seconds to just compile, like literally even just a few conversations or even just a few DRs of people being like, I'm the reason Johnny's staying. And then they all in a row, like Taryn had said, they all in a row say, I'm the reason Johnny stayed. I'm the reason Johnny stayed. And then Johnny at the end being like, look what I did. Like, it's so simple. It really is not that hard. And they also took a lot of footage from that same time period that they could have been using other footage for and decided to show, you know, that Allie was the person who did this and she wasn't at all. So they totally had time to fix this. And even if they didn't, like to give them the benefit of the doubt, say they didn't have the time and they just were like, what do we do? Let's just make it on Allie. Okay. Well, here's the episode where they could have shown us everything that happened. They could have gone back and shown us rather than talking about Paris's sweaty hands or, you know, whatever they decided to talk about, showing hey, Wendy's. Like,
those hands are really sweaty.
I'm struggling really bad. My hands are crazy sweaty. I have a condition, as you all know, called Palmer hyperhidrosis.
But shades of Raven Walton tonight, Mike.
Happy National Hydroporosis Month.
It's April Hydroporosis Month.
I like how she's like, as you all know, like, did we know that? I mean, I didn't know that.
She talked about it in the very first competition, though. To be fair, again, Rosina's screams have sort of overridden any sort of knowledge we have, which also shows Johnny, I mean, he's a comp beast, but he's doing especially well in these endurance competitions, yeah, too. He's like two for three.
Okay. So, all right. So we've ruled out that it was too late in the week to show us what Johnny was doing, but that leads me to then my second thesis. Is it that production does not care for Johnny because potentially, Mike, he's not good in the diary room?
That's exactly what I was talking about before. I think that because you have people like Allie and Will and Olivia giving some of these more like animated, goofy, excitable confessionals, whereas Johnny's a little more mellow, they get a lion's share of the screen time anyway. So it would make sense. I could see, again, well, I totally agree with Melissa that like from on paper, it wouldn't make sense to attribute the work of somebody to essentially copying and pasting it and saying that it was someone else's work. I can understand why from an entertainment perspective, they would say, okay, this sounds better coming out of Allie's mouth, even though Johnny has now sort of risen into his own with this whole butterfly of death zombie mixed metaphors.
Yeah, Melissa, that's a great point that Mike's making. How could anybody say that Johnny isn't good in the diary room when he's giving us gold like this?
Rising from the ashes, the butterfly of death.
The butterfly of death. Wow.
Yeah, that's a nickname. That's a self-given nickname. Very nice.
Yeah, the butterfly.
Very scary.
Wow, Mike, that is a fantastic nicknaming. That could really take off.
Canadians are so nice. They can't even give themselves grim birds. This has got to be a butterfly. It does remind me, though, of a Simpsons joke where Bart says that whenever he dies, he wants to be resurrected as the butterfly because nobody ever suspects the butterfly.
Yeah, wow. The butterfly of death is even more sinister. Listen to this at the end of the episode.
The butterfly of death is ready to flap its wings and shake this house to its core. Watch out.
No, it was the...
It's flapping
his
wings.
Is that the butterfly noise, Mike?
I mean, I haven't listened very closely to butterflies. I've gotten to many conversations with them. Also, I wonder if a regular butterfly makes Polly Calafiore cry. What does the butterfly of death do?
The butterfly of death.
Yeah, scary, but also beautiful and graceful.
Yes. Mike, is it possible that the producers were doing Johnny a favor the whole time and not showing us all his diary rooms?
What, you think like he's made more like I am the slowly gestating mealworm coming out of its shelter? Like he's doing like a David Attenborough, like talking through the life stages. I am a pupa waiting for
every diary room with Johnny is just him talking about some sort of butterfly metaphor
or something else from nature. He's like, listen here, everybody in this house is gonna pay because I am the rabid giraffe of this house. Mark my words.
I'm here for Jungle Johnny, absolutely.
I feel like that would be even more entertaining. They should include that more often.
Melissa, does he refer to himself often as the butterfly of death? Has that taken off in the house?
I don't know if it's taken off in the house, but I know it's taken off on social media outside of the house. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody calls him the butterfly of death. There's even GIFs floating around of him as a butterfly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely a thing. Okay. This is not the first time I've heard butterfly of death.
Well, it's so interesting that, you know, so many people are regretting their choice to keep Johnny around this week. It's a real butterfly of death effect in that one choice you make can profoundly affect the rest of your time in the game.
The whole game. Yeah. OK, so let's talk about some of the things that were going on here as we maybe try to get to the bottom of why we haven't seen so much. Like who stands to gain from burying Johnny's game? And ultimately, if he goes on to win, which I feel like he has a very strong chance to do, does it ultimately hurt the season? And why have other people been built up? So all things to keep on the back burner as we go through all that. So we only see a little bit about Johnny's miraculous comeback. Allie is shown, Melissa, taking credit for what happened, about how she felt like that Johnny will be loyal to her if she keeps him in the house.
Yeah, she definitely, I feel like everybody felt like Johnny was going to be loyal to them if they kept him in the house. So Johnny did a really great job of making, sorry to bring it back to the Johnny thing, but Johnny did a really great job of making everybody feel like it was a benefit for their own personal game to keep him in the house.
Yeah.
And really, there's no way it's a benefit to everybody's personal game to keep him in the house.
We got a little bit of that. We got certainly the, you know, the Parasite and Allie and Liv talking about how that they all felt like it was beneficiary to have Johnny stay in the house for them. But we got from Kayla, she said, oh, well, we didn't really want Johnny to stay, but everybody else wanted him to stay, so we just went along with it. Is that fair? Fake news, Melissa?
Initially, they weren't so keen on the idea of keeping him, but he was able to talk to Kayla and kind of convinced her that it would be good for her to have him to potentially go after Derek. Johnny didn't tell Kayla that, but that's something Kayla was thinking, was if I keep Johnny, he's a big target. He could go after Derek instead of me, and that would be beneficial for me eventually to have somebody else target Derek instead of me. And, you know, at the same time, she also was kind of on the fence about it, but she was able to be convinced. So it's not that the whole time she wasn't interested at all in keeping him. Eventually she came around. Eventually Derek came around. But yeah, they probably were some of the longer holdouts than everybody else.
Okay. Mike, we got into this big Wonka-esque HOH competition. Could you paint the word picture of what this HOH competition was supposed to be?
Imagine, if you will, a forbidden planet inhabited by candy, where the surface is so uninhabitable that you must deck yourself out in solid gold to contain the elements, where streams of jelly-like magma come out from the top and rain hellfire down upon you. That's, I think, the original image behind it. Yes. I don't know if it paid up.
Melissa, what was the uniform they had to wear for this competition?
I was going to ask the same question because that was very tight.
Very form-fitting.
Form-fitting gold leotards.
I don't know.
On everybody.
If Paris had her way, it would have had matching gold gloves, though.
Definitely. Yeah. But yeah, they definitely showed a nice close-up of Will at one point, which I was not expecting. caught me a little off guard.
Which one? The one where that he was passing gas, allegedly?
Honestly.
Oh my god, I really thought you were actually farting.
Well.
That's part of the Newfie ritual, right?
Was he screeching everybody, yeah. Melissa?
Yeah, that's part of the screeching, I think. I don't quite understand it.
Not to be confused with Rosina screeching.
Yeah. Although my favorite moment of the competition was when we saw Olivia was going out.
And Olivia's out.
Shiza Minnelli!
Yeah, Shiza Minnelli, Mike.
Maybe this time she'll win an HOH. Nope, not gonna happen.
No. Mike, are you a big Shiza Minnelli fan?
Oh my god, S for Shiza is one of my favorite specials. I mean, I loved her on Arrested Development. She was fantastic. So I'm a Shiza stan all the way.
All right. Ultimately, we see Paris and Johnny are down to the end. Now, Melissa, it seemed like that Paris and Johnny made a deal, but then it seems like that there was no mention of the deal after the fact. And unlike when Will and Kayla had allegedly made a deal a couple of weeks ago, were you surprised that, like, was that just not a thing?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't even know a deal was made during the HOH, so that was a little surprising to me, I guess, because that really didn't come into play, like, at all throughout the week, because there was already the Kayla, Derek target, and it really didn't really matter. And I also feel like that whole deal thing didn't really come into play just because Paris wasn't really considered a target. It's possible it would have come into play had Paris won, but because Johnny was the HOH, I don't think it really mattered because I don't think he was really ever thinking of Paris as his ultimate target.
Yeah. All right. Well, we see Johnny. He's celebrating with Liv and Allie. Mike, everybody must have said the word savage 100 times in a 2-minute span. Everything was very savage at one point.
What a bunch of wimpy non-leaders.
Wimpy.
Throw that word around. I mean, they've been wearing
non-leaders.
Yeah, they've been wearing a lot of toques this week. Non-leader. So. The beanies are appropriate, but yeah, savage.
Yeah.
Quite a savage episode, I would say.
Yeah. Melissa, do they say savage a ton on the live feeds?
They say Seward a lot. I've noticed that they always talk about people sewering their games. Mm-hmm. That's like the word of the season is that you're sewering my game or he sewered his game. And I that was the first I've heard of that one. There's always these like lingo that just picks up or in the house each season, and each season's different and the fans always pick up on it. And so you start seeing them talk like that. And it's very strange to see each season the subreddit looking totally different, Twitter looking totally different. And then once the season's over, it's like they forget all of it.
Yeah, it is weird that like a word like halfway through, like Gumpy last season ends up like nobody was saying Gumpy in the first week. And then all of a sudden by the middle of the season, everybody is saying Gumpy.
Yeah, I think we need like a Merriam-Webster Big Brother dictionary so we can find out like what the word of the season was.
I know. There really should be like a post or something about it that where the people just take each of the seasons and say what the word is for the season or what the few words are. I mean, like, I can't even remember now, but I remember in Big Brother 16, there were some words that were just constantly used and not just Fruit Loop Dingus. There was like so many words. And then Big Brother 17, there were so many words. I just feel like
I have it on good authority that her dat was said all the time in 2016.
Yeah. All right, Melissa, this is an off-season podcast for you and Taryn and Brent to crack.
That would actually be very fun.
The words of the seasons. I think that's totally Mike. That's going to be in the Big Brother off season October 10th.
October 10th. Good for you.
If you could join the LFC perfect. For that episode.
Big Brother 9's got Bueno on lock. I know that.
Yeah. All right. So we see Derek and Kayla start to realize that, the jig is up. Nobody's talking to us. We're screwed here.
Yeah, I wonder if it's to the point that you guys made before. It was sort of like because they were the last to hop on the bandwagon, they're sort of the first ones that are ripped off of it. I mean, they were definitely playing defense the entire time. And I feel like Kayla might have made some legitimate points that were not necessarily addressed in the show's edit proper, even though it brought us this fantastic Paris versus Kayla, like parsed out house meeting. But yeah, they pretty much knew from the get go. The guy that once said in private last week that he was going to sink his teeth into our flesh. So safe to say he's out for said pound of flesh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We get to see Johnny get his HOH room, and Johnny obviously very happy to get his HOH basket and his video from his husband and his friend Victoria. And Johnny has some more gold in the diary room telling us about just how happy he is during this moment.
Seeing that video, it was like just the best, like the best, best,
best, just the best, wow. Best.
So descriptive. It's really painting a picture for me. It's
just like the butterfly of bestiness. So good.
The best of all the bests.
Is that the next thing in the Den of Temptation? The butterfly of bestiness.
The best, best. Okay. But Johnny goes back to Kayla and he talks to her about how, I felt like you guys were playing me. And so then Derek gets involved in this conversation and it turns into, well, everybody said they wanted you out. And Johnny says, I don't know about that. Let's ask everybody. Let's ask everybody. And I think that Kayla might have been expecting Johnny to not call their bluff. But said, OK, I think let's do that. And then, OK, let's do it. And then it was so great when they like looked back at each other like, oh, this is not a good idea.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well,
and also the fact that Johnny went around telling everyone like, Kayla and Derek want you in there. They want you all to come in. It's like they did not want that. That's what you suggested.
It's so, yeah, someone's unintentionally starting a house meeting. I like it for a number of reasons. A, you know, one of the trepidations that Johnny has in winning this is that he has made so many promises to so many people that now you're sort of giving people opportunities to compare notes or at least for you to show your own hand. So I think that him sort of wanting to bring everybody in to get a conversation going helps share information in a way that's not necessarily backhanded. And I mean, this was so much fun. And Johnny also makes this really good point of Kayla being like, they threw under the bus. And he's like, they're also the people that saved me and voted for me to stay. So like, part of me thinks I don't really care because, yeah, they might have talked crap about me on Saturday, but on Thursday they voted for me to stay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the house meeting is lots of fireworks, Melissa, and everybody is nobody's speaking up and backing Derek and Kayla here at this point, even though Kayla is saying every single person here said Johnny is the number one target.
Yeah. It was definitely very fun to watch on the live feeds. I will say that the edit makes Kayla look a lot worse than she did, or at least in my opinion, than she did on the actual feeds. I feel like the edit made it look like she was just digging herself into a hole and no one was backing her. And it just made her look really guilty and really terrible and that she was lying, which is not the case. And especially in her conversation with her confrontation with Paris, because they like showed the receipts, but they didn't show all of the receipts. Mm-hmm. So they just showed half of the story, which is that Kayla was telling the truth. And so was Paris, though.
Yes.
So
they were very hard to follow. Even with the flashback, I felt like that. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait, hold on. What am I supposed to? What are they trying to tell me? It was very hard to follow. I mean, I think not since Taryn and Matt Liguori argued about when did Taryn say that Johnny was going to save himself? And then when did Matt Liguori predict that Johnny was going to be safe? It was very difficult to follow the thread of what was happening.
Yeah, yes. if only they had DMs to take a look back at. That was truly the evidence. But yeah, I agree with Melissa. It was holding up receipts, but it's like holding up receipts like half your hand covering it. Like, yep, this is it. This is the entire receipt. Yes. Don't worry about it.
I get the sense that it was a CVS type, very long receipt. But I feel like if you're opening that box, that I feel like that we have a definitive answer to. Should have shown us nothing if it was unclear.
Yeah, exactly. They should have either showed us nothing and let the audience say, well, I don't know who to believe. Who should we believe? Which is basically what we should be thinking anyway, because they're both technically telling the truth, but also both technically lying because they're having very selective memories, because Paris did tell Kayla that it was Johnny and Maddie at first. Then she went back to Maddie, and that's when the whole crying thing happened and she felt guilty, and then went back to Kayla and changed her story, saying it was just Ryan. So that's why they both are remembering two separate conversations that they had that are both truthful, but they're also not remembering the other conversation that makes the other person truthful. So it really was very unfair to Kayla, in my opinion, that they only showed Paris being correct, because it makes Kayla look like she's coming up with these lies out of nowhere. And I've seen a lot of tweets about it. People being like, why in the world is Kayla just making this stuff up? Why is she doing this? She's not. She's really not. And they made Kayla just look very bad in this argument, and that she was like yelling and getting very heated, whereas Paris was yelling at Kayla. Paris was really up in Kayla's, like, you know, and they didn't show that at all. They kind of just showed Paris being like, I didn't say that, I never said that, and then like going back to like down like this on the couch. Like, it was a little unfair, and you can tell that the editors are very into the idea of Kayla as a villain.
Yes. No, I thought that ever since her HOH, where they kept showing her after she came in to talk to somebody, and then they would like walk out of the room and they would show her like laughing about they're so stupid. And I think that they're really trying to go with Kayla as the villain of the season.
Well, yeah. Okay. Sorry to like interrupt, but that like that whole point, I never got to say anything about it. But when she was like laughing after people would leave, she would talk to herself in the room, being like, "This is so awkward." Like, like it wasn't like she was sitting there like, "Ha ha ha, I've got you." She was literally laughing, being like, "This is so crazy." Like talking to all these people, and they really just drug her through the mud, making it seem like she was laughing at them and laughing because she was making a fool out of them or something like that. But most of the time, like, I mean, I'm the kind of person who laughs when they feel awkward or uncomfortable. And that's what I feel like Kayla was doing. So, you know, it just is totally unfair the way the edit is painting her. But at the same time, like, I love the idea of having a good, strong female villain character, because, you know, that's great. But I don't like the idea of they're painting her out as 100% a villain when she's really not. Mm-hmm. She's not a villain. I mean, she's fun and she's feisty, but I don't see her as a villain.
Mike, what's your take on Derek?
Oh, yeah, well, it's a complete sideline here. Derek reminds me of, for some reason, he reminds me of like those guys in Times Square and outside like Man's Chinese Theater who like sort of look like Captain America, like they're wearing the Captain America yeah, outfit. Yeah. And they're like giving out autographs, right, but like they really don't.
Like Robin Cass had like a picture of a guy on the wall. And it's like, okay, let's find this guy this season. And then they found Derek, and they were like, okay, close enough. All right, fine. Just put him on the show.
Yeah, this is like a branch off the main trunk of the tree. That's what he really like reminds me of. I know that Reddit is all over comparing him to the character of Beans from Even Stevens. So that's something that I can't get out of my head. Going back to the Daily
Thing, James Maslow show.
That show was fallen, unfortunately. And fell out. But I to the point that you were making, though, I wonder if one of the reasons why they painted the Kayla side, not necessarily the Paris side, is because it's sort of just the easier thing to do. I mean, I think you made a point about how, like, if they showed both, it would have made things even more complicated. And go back to, like, a couple weeks ago when they did the same thing to Ryan. It's just sometimes the easiest thing to do to sort of take one certain side. It may not be objective, but in terms of trying to paint a narrative to an audience, it's the easiest thing to do without complicating things unnecessarily by saying, well, she's also wrong, but she's also wrong. I will say, though, by far, one of my favorite parts of the episode and of this confrontation was Paris saying, correct me if I'm wrong. Kayla stops her and says, you'll be wrong, so I'll correct you.
That was very great.
Yeah. And then so Johnny wants to talk to Paris, and then Kale's like, well, I'm not leaving, because they got like back and forth. Well, I'm not leaving, because then whatever you have to say to her, you could say in front of me. And they end up having this whole conversation out. And ultimately, we really don't get anywhere except that Paris eventually has to go back to Maddie and smooth things over with Maddie. Now, listen, let me make sure I'm reading between the lines here on this. So this is going back to when Kayla was HOH, and then Paris came in at the last second and basically threw Ryan under the bus by saying that it was Ryan who was telling Maddie to go and target Dayla, correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was that Ryan had concocted that whole plan when initially in her initial conversations with Kayla, Paris had told her that it was Maddie and Johnny. So, or at least had thrown their names out there, and not throwing Ryan's name out there. Then later on, she feels guilty about it with Maddie and is crying, and then comes back to Kayla to correct her story. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it dates back to that time period, which feels so long ago now. But that's the reason. And it's frustrating how it's getting twisted in this way, because I'm fine with the fact that they both are viewing it incorrectly. And that's fine. But then to show it as if Kayla has just made this up, it's a little frustrating.
And then, Melissa, was this entire episode taking place on Thursday night?
Yeah.
So wow. This, like the entire show.
Because
we get back into another house meeting after mm-hmm. that, where then like Allie is being thrown under the bus here, and she's saying no, that we didn't want to get rid of Johnny. And everybody is going back to being very upset. And you know, it's just a very interesting dynamic here to have Johnny as the HOH, because you have now the three very clearly defined sides. And I think that for the first time that's come through on the television show, where you have Dayla, where you have the ding-dongs, right? Allie and Liv, and then you had the threesome of Will and Paris and Maddie. And so here you have Johnny now in the middle with these three factions in the house, Mike.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to set things up interestingly for the triple eviction, which I'm sure we're going to be talking about. It sort of got my mind sort of ruminating on this idea that I want to present the question. Do you think that in the past few seasons of Big Brother, both like Canadian, American, what have you, do you think we're becoming more reliant on these ideas of pairs and small groups? Just because I'm thinking back to like BB18, when there were three pairs in the final two, Big Brother 19, the theme of the season, besides let's listen to Paul, was essentially ride or die. Let me pick one person to go with until the end. Now we have this stuff going on. Have we gone away from like the Big Brother 16 mentality of one big group? Now it's much more, let me pick one person to go with, and we'll just keep, I'll jut around to different alliances, but this is the main person I'm sticking to.
That's definitely what the direction's going into now. And I hate the phrase ride or die. I just hate it. It's so annoying.
Does that go into your word for Big Brother 19 dictionary?
Yeah, totally. I hate it so much. But it's really what's going on now. And I feel like there used to be more of like the fivesomes. I feel like we saw a lot of fivesomes, and now we're really not seeing that at all, which is a little strange. I mean, I guess technically there are certain groups of five, but they never last for more than like an episode or two episodes, you know? And it's weird to me, but I feel like nowadays with the games being so fluid, that it makes more sense to only trust like one person, because everyone else is just going to betray you at one point or another.
Melissa, we saw in the episode that Johnny picked Maddie to go, who's really a forgotten person in the season. I think that her and Will are the two people that's like, what, they're still in the house? And
hey, she chose Paris, Rob.
She chose Paris. Paris chose her. They're going to, okay, whatever. But that being said, so that how did Maddie, of all people, get picked to go to Wendy's?
Every week they're picking a have not, but Johnny doesn't really care about Dayla, and they were the two have nots. And Maddie's never been a have not, so she never has gotten to go to Wendy's. So that's why he picked her.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess also strategically wants to see where her head's at, but I don't know.
I will also say, I know the Wendy's segments have been much maligned, but as someone who participated in a Wendy's commercial 5 years ago, I feel like I am still brand loyal.
Let's go back to that. What Wendy's commercial?
I was in a Wendy's commercial back in 2013. The concept was,
is this on YouTube?
I have pictures that I should probably send.
Oh my god!
So the concept was there were like yearbook photos, and it was like some people are a little bit different. They do Wendy's, and the two pictures I was in a fencing club, and I was in hip hop dance club. Because there were not enough people around that day and they were really just picking at the bottom of the barrel. So
these were not real yearbook photos. These were posed yearbook photos for the commercial.
No, I cannot say I was either in fencing club or a hip hop dancing club in high school.
Wow. Mike Bloom is always sharing something, whether it was that he worked at the Outback or whether he was in the traveling company that was putting on shows for kids. Really the most interesting man alive.
I'm glad you didn't mention the man whore stuff.
The man, of course. So that's always a crowd pleaser also, right?
I, on the other hand, was a man whore.
Was that in the yearbook? Were you voted most likely to be a man whore?
Yeah. It's one of those underground yearbook categories that they didn't put. They put like a special like folding section that they put after you graduated. But yeah, they were underground superlatives.
Yeah. OK, so we see Johnny have a conversation with Kayla and she's like, look, you got to leave me off the block. Everybody wants me gone. I'm the only way that you'll survive, Johnny. And he sort of floats the idea to her, Melissa, that, me surviving is not necessarily you leaving the game. And Johnny's starting to lay the groundwork for Derek being his target.
Yeah, that is Johnny's plan. He wants Derek out. He doesn't want Kayla out. And it's mainly because he sees Derek as a huge threat to him in the triple eviction. Derek has a lot of comp wins. He could see Derek not only winning HOH, but possibly beating him in the veto if he doesn't win HOH. So he really sees Derek as a big threat. And that's why he wants to target Derek over Kayla this week. And so it really is his plan to get Derek out.
Yeah. So we got to Johnny. Also, he had a conversation with Liv about that. And they're talking about Derek as well there. And Liv thinks Derek is also sneaky. We get to the shortlist and the yada, yada, yada.
But to be fair, I hate the shortlist. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But I do think it was good to see Johnny give his description of the various people on the shortlist, because it shows that he really knows the game and he really knows everyone's place in the game. And normally it's just like, oh, I see him as a threat, so I'm going to put him up. But it really showed that Johnny knew the intricacies of the various relationships and where he fits into it. And so I think that this is like one of the few times I actually enjoyed watching the shortlist portion of the episode.
Yeah. I have no doubt that, I think that Johnny is twice as good as anybody else who's even there in the house. It's just this such a weird season, Mike, where you have a person who's really, dominating in terms of gameplay, but it's almost like a Survivor season where it's like, oh, we want it to be a surprise. We don't want it to be that obvious that this person is going to run away with the win. So we got to hide him in the edit.
I mean, I don't know if we're going to get the, I don't know, what would it be like the Johnny versus Derek debate of, oh, Derek should have won. I mean, I guess it's kind of an obvious comparison, but it's sort of Andy-esque, right? In that Andy, when he first won HOH at what, Final Nine in season 15, that's when we really got the big thing of like, I love Andy. Andy's great. And that was, we had a few weeks to sort of germinate on that. But for a while, he was, I mean, Zingbot made a freaking ghost joke about the fact that he was essentially invisible on the show.
Yeah, I guess so. Melissa, do you see it the same way?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say because I feel like I would be willing to forgive them if now they really realize his potential and they start to really focus on him. And I could see why they maybe didn't focus on him more in the beginning, because he really did kind of seem like a non-entity in the actual show narrative. But even though on the live feeds, he was not a non-entity, we all knew what he was doing and we saw what he was doing. But it was possible that he was just going to go out in the double eviction or just like go out in the triple and not really have any part of it. And so it really wouldn't have mattered and we wouldn't be having this conversation. So I can see why production might assume that he might just like trickle out and go out early, but he really is great. And I think that if they now start to focus on him and show like a really great end game, if he wins the season, it could be really great.
Okay. Hopefully there's still time for that. Let's get into some of your questions. Okay. Scott St. Pierre apparently has found some still photos of Bloom in fencing attire are we getting paid for this, Mike, this Wendy's commercial?
Only in my humiliation. That counts as currency.
Yes. And there is Mike in the dance club for the. Which one are you, Mike?
That's a good question. I'm the one on the right, given the most toot I could possibly do. This I actually had a fun conversation with the girl like posing with me, because I'm like, we're like, we can't do anything like obscene or like anything relating to something.
On the other hand, was a man whore.
Exactly. I kind of want to live up to that superlative. So I'm like, I'll point at you and you just give a thumbs up and that'll be our sort of dance club sign.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like you're pointing down in a certain area.
Oh, Scott, can we go back to that?
Feels like I'm on the worst edition of America's Next Top Model ever.
Yeah, should Mike have a laser pointer in the next one, Alyssa?
Just so we know exactly.
Yeah, then there'll be no confusion. Okay.
Yeah, that just so we know he's pointing at her thumbs up.
Okay.
I can't wait for the next RHAPHOH where it's like, in the dance club picture, what color was Mike's cutoff vest?
Yeah.
Oh my god, this is perfect for an HOH challenge.
All right, let's get into everything. I think who will win that, Ross Matthews?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay, all right, let's get into these questions. And Tasis wants to know, do Australians dip their fries in Vegemite? Boy, I hope not.
I have never tried Vegemite, but I've heard really bad things.
Yeah, from one particular person.
yeah. Good. Don't even waste your time, Alyssa. Okay. They should make the have-nots eat Vegemite, Mike.
I mean, I don't know. That'd be an affront to, like, maybe if they had a Tim visit and, like, give out Vegemite like he was Santa Claus, like what they did with Jesse Claus, maybe that would be a way to do it. But otherwise, that's a little insulting.
Yeah. Okay. Jordan wants to know, so what happened to the Heaven and Hell theme? Don't worry about it. I mean,
disappeared.
Who needs Heaven and Hell when we have the Butterfly of Death?
The Butterfly of Death is ready to flap its wings and shake this house to its core. Watch out.
Yeah, why does this sound like a mouse? We got rid of that stuff, but we still have the deliberation room is still mystifying to me from a pure design perspective, because you're sitting on a big-ass feathery blackbird.
Right.
And then I just love the like mystical Jedi wave that happens over the wheel as it lights up. Like, really cool effects I got into this 2-minute segment.
There's a lot.
And also, why do they show everybody's headshot? Why do they like even the people who have left?
They could be on the short list too. And don't even get into why are they in chainmail or anything like that. Melissa, did you guys already cover on any of the LFC roundtables the diary room leak of Johnny in the DR?
Of Johnny in the DR or Will in the Will. DR?
No, I'm pretty sure it was Johnny in the DR that he was referring to himself as the Butterfly of Death. And the producer was like, okay, Johnny, we're going to need you to never, ever say that again. Could you please just try to give it to us again and make sure you never, ever don't do that noise.
We'll never put you on the show.
Don't make that noise or talk about Butterfly of Death because it's not
playing.
No more butterfly references.
You say that one more time, we're going to take away your big strategic edit. We're going to give it to somebody else.
What are you guys talking about? That was the best.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
He took away his edit because he talks about butterflies too much.
I like this idea of like, Johnny, you keep doing this and we're just going to keep giving everything you do to the ding dongs. So they're going to take all the credit for all your moves.
Okay, so we're joking around, but let me build on that. Melissa, do you think it's possible that when Johnny gets a line to say in the diary room, that maybe he's like, I'm not going to say that, or might no sell some lines that he's given. And maybe that's why we don't see that much Johnny.
It's possible, although I don't really see Johnny doing that.
Like,
I feel like Johnny's not the type to like go against the DR and be like, that's not really me. I feel like he would just say
it. Maybe he doesn't give it his all. Maybe he just like, it's like, okay.
He might not be as flashy. He might just say it. But I mean, even so, I feel like that's such a petty reason to not give someone the edit they deserve, or at least maybe I'm just, you know, wishful thinking. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep going. Doom Tribe, are the Ding Dongs another BB Camp product placement like Wendy's and Hasbro? Yeah, I suspect that they don't have Ding Dongs in Canada. I bet they have them, but they're called something else. That's my guess. Scott, can you weigh in on this?
Did you just call them doorbells?
I don't know. Doorbells? Yeah.
I do like, I was thinking about
Honkers
this before.
Or something.
Yeah, calling them Dayla and the Ding Dong sounds like some sort of like off-brand British children's television show from 1970.
Dayla and the Ding Dongs. I like it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Anthony. Can Maddie win the game? No, right?
I mean, anything's possible. But I mean, if everything keeps going this direction, no. She will have no jury votes. I mean, she might get to the end. But at this point, I don't think anybody respects her game.
Could she beat Will?
That is a tough one.
I mean, you could get a scenario where hypothetically, you know, this Maddie, Paris and Will threesome end up making it to the final three. And for whatever reason, you know, Paris has sweaty hands and Maddie ends up like winning. Like, you know, I bet that she's probably she's a super fan. I bet she's like counting stuff in the house. And I bet she's probably going to be good with that trivia at the end of the game. So you could see potentially, you know, she takes Will to the final two. Is that a possibility?
Please do not let that be a possibility. That sounds like a nightmare scenario for me. I just would be devastated.
So, forget a veil. You'd cover yourself in like a big black sheet.
Literally, I would just be gone.
Put yourself in the cocoon to come out as the butterfly of death. Come Big Brother 20.
The butterfly
I'd be
of
crying.
Life. Okay. Okay. Does Mike Bloom have a new hairdo? Steve wants to know.
Oh, wow. Mike, do you have a new hairdo?
Boy, I mean, I haven't cut it, so it looks horrendous. I need Cassandra to walk through this door and like style me.
Give you not a makeover.
You're asking the hard hitting questions.
Yeah, not the boys from Big Brother Canada. I don't want to have them work on me.
No.
What about the Pauly?
Oh my God.
Oh, you want me to do a pee-pee?
PP always pulls through. Okay, Jordan was. Can Mike Bloom do a Butterfly of Death rap?
No.
Okay. Well, you were in the hip hop dance.
It seems like we've gotten to all Mike Bloom questions, chat room. So
I'm flattered.
That means it's time to get into the spoilers. If you don't want to hear, once we do three Mike Bloom questions in a row, that's Scott's way of telling me that we are running thin on questions.
Butterfly of Death likes to flap his wings. Johnny makes references. DR gives him digs. There we go.
Okay, hold on. Woo! I was gonna drop a beat on you, Mike. That's
I don't know. That, you might pull that video from the CBS website after you do it.
Show his picture of him in the hip hop dance crew while he raps underneath it.
Yes, that's from the music.
It'll really help substantiate the image, Melissa.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll save it. Mike Bloom's rapping for Mike Bloom on the voicemails for Survivor in a couple of weeks. Okay. All right. So we'll get into the live feed spoilers. We'll talk about the veto and what's going on there. Of course, LFC Roundtable coming up tomorrow. Is the Boston Know-It-Alls or Podcast House, is that preempting anything with LFC Roundtable, Melissa?
I don't believe so. Okay. I think we're still doing it. At least that's all I know is that we are still doing it.
Yeah. It's just increasing the likelihood that Taryn will be podcasting and there'll be like four or five people off screen making noise.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes. Imagine like Brenchel times five.
Oh, boy.
Okay. All right. So be on the lookout for that. And then on Thursday night, of course, join Taryn live after the episode on Thursday. Is this triple eviction this Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I know you guys are not happy about that.
No, not at all.
Yes.
Miserable.
I mean, I think, again, going back to like the putting the production hat back on to cover my unruly hair. I mean, I think the past two triple evictions, they've at least gotten like big TV moments out of it. So I can understand how from a gameplay perspective, it sort of stinks, especially sort of condensing the end game. But considering we got from both triple evictions, you know, Brittany putting up Willow and Sarah intentionally or unintentionally getting rid of her, and then Kevin really pulling through in the clutch. I think they're just trying to sort of bank on those bigger moments, yeah. You know.
Now, last year was great. Last year was great, and you lost Dre and Will, and it was like, who cares?
I cared.
Why? Who did you like?
I wanted Dre and Will to come together and make a move. I was like looking forward to it all game, and then they just went out with a whimper instead of a bang.
Yeah.
And it was very, very depressing. But I loved that Kevin was able to save himself. I did love that moment, but it was just sucky all around. Yeah. And it always is sucky. So I'm, you know, still going to be very upset.
Here's my pitch to Big Brother Canada for Big Brother Canada 7. First off, okay, I think they have way too many people on Big Brother Canada. If they come back from Big Brother Canada 7, what would they have? They started with 14, Melissa, and then they added the gatecrashers.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's too many. It's too many people. You don't have enough time to tell this story, so get it down. But if you're going to insist on 16 people, have the triple eviction in the second week. Just get it out of the way.
That's what I said on the roundtable or on Thursday night. I said that they should just do it early. If they're going to do a triple eviction because they're like obsessed with it for some reason or another, they should do it early when we don't care about the people. They shouldn't do it at the end when each person has their own unique storyline. And instead, they just sweep them out the door right away without like any sort of, you know, great strategy during the week or veto moment or whatever. It's just like they just kick them out of the game with no fanfare, no nothing. And it's just, I wouldn't care so much if it was in the beginning, but now I care. And not because I care because I'm like, oh man, this is such exciting TV. I care because we're missing the exciting TV or exciting feeds that could be happening during the week.
And you know what else? I think that the who would you save when you go in the diary room, I think that plays better with, you know, 14 people in the house. It's like, oh, I like that guy. All right, I vote to save Jimmy. Okay, oh, I like her. She seems nice. And it's not like, oh, okay, that guy's pretty. That guy's a threat. But let's just vote him out right away. So it's like you're voting for who do you like? It's like a first impression type thing. So you know what? How about a triple eviction the first night, Melissa? That'll get them going.
Honestly, I would much rather go for that than to just unceremoniously kick people out before they even get to do anything, like the past few Big Brothers.
Yeah. And then send those two people into the battle back to come back into the house.
Whatever. We don't know. We don't have time. We don't have time to see another house. That we got to focus all our attention on this house.
I would actually say that, you know, I think I would eschew the triple eviction in favor of doing a couple weeks like what they did with Celebrity Big Brother and like the double eviction weeks from like Big Brothers 5 through 7 of condense them to do like on the Monday show, you have an entire round and then Wednesday and Thursday, you would do the entirely different round where you have an eviction pre-taped on like Sunday and then one on Thursday. So that gets that game time in like we want to, but it also condenses things where you can get rid of a certain amount of people in different weeks without needing to flush everything together in the course of one night.
Yeah,
definitely. And I've been saying all along that like I would much prefer to have like a double eviction right there, like two double evictions right in a row rather than having a triple eviction, just because it just stifles all gameplay with the triple.
Okay. All right. Mike, did you hear about the names being floated around for the next U.S. Celebrity Big Brother?
I'm not sure. What was it?
Shiza Minnelli, I think, is being talked to.
Shiza Minnelli!
Wow. Oh, my God. You know, I heard that Shiza Minnelli, they paid her, what, like a cool $3 million to get her in there in the first place? I mean, after a shaved chest ended up passing away a short time ago, I think that she's more into coming back into the house.
Also, I think that WNBA legend Shiza Chesley. It's gonna be mentioned.
You literally can't even get the words out.
I love her hit song "Come On Shipper Nation." It's all about all the relationships that we ship online.
That's all right. Yeah, no, all right, we got too stupid. All right, let's talk.
We're
about
going down that rabbit hole. Okay. Let's get back to the Mike Bloom questions, please.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
all right.
A spoiler.
Warning.
Spoilers.
Warning means that an actual
spoiler
against this country has been detected, and that protective action should be taken.
Okay.
There you go. The All butterfly right. of death.
But Mike did the butterfly of death. Okay. All right. Let's talk about the veto. Okay. As many of you know, Melissa, what is the latest with the veto?
The veto was played and Derek won the veto.
Uh-oh.
And should I go further?
Yeah, go for it.
the veto ceremony happened and Derek used the veto, saved himself, and we have a replacement nominee. Should I go for it?
Go for it. Yeah.
Allie is the new replacement nominee. So we have Allie and Kayla on the block.
Okay.
One of them will be leaving.
All right. So Allie, who single-handedly saved Johnny, Mike, now she sits on the block.
The true mastermind is going to most likely leave. No, I don't think she is, though, because I know that there was some ruminations, right, that they were possibly going to get rid of her.
On ruminations.
Oh, she's a Shesley coming back with her hit song. Yeah, and I know that there was some talk about, like, if they threw Liv up there, maybe they would get rid of her, but it seems like a foregone conclusion that Kayla's going to be going, so we have a D without the Ayla going into the triple eviction. Melissa's doing a weird spoiler-esque dance, so maybe that's not the thing.
Yeah. Oh. I'm doing the dance of we really have no idea. I honestly can't tell you because this is the same time last week that we thought Johnny was for sure out the door.
Matt Liguori.
Apparently Matt Liguori knew, but I honestly think it could go either way. And Paris is basically potentially leading the charge to save Kayla this week, potentially, because she has gone back and forth all day. And so we really don't know what's going to happen. But Paris seems to believe that it might be in her best interest to keep Kayla. And Maddie, at the same time, has been saying, why am I trying to get rid of, or why am I keeping the person who's been coming after me all this time and who's been saying she's coming after me, aka Allie? And so she might flip over. She's saying right now she's, you know, voting out Kayla, and Will saying I'm voting out Kayla, but there's, you know, there's always room for shifting. And I really don't want to count Kayla out at this point because we weren't counting Johnny out, and look what Johnny did. And now look at this. So
yes, but is Kayla the butterfly of death?
She's not the butterfly of death,
but she is a rugby player.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. All right. I wanted to pick apart the butterfly of death metaphor before we go. But Melissa, I know you follow this stuff so closely. Can you tell me why it would make sense for Paris to want to keep Kayla in the house? Because the way that I'm looking at it, where the difference between, Derek and Kayla are a pair, and then also Liv and Allie are a pair, but Liv and Allie don't really win stuff. So isn't it way more dangerous to keep Derek and Kayla together in the house where both of them could win comps?
I think it depends whether Paris believes Kayla, because Paris and Kayla, after they had this big blow up, they ended up talking and Kayla apologized, and Kayla said that it later on that it was like a fake apology, but Kayla's very good at bonding with people, and so is Paris. So I think they're both playing each other a lot bit. And Kayla and Paris have been bonding, or at least giving off the appearance of bonding. They've been talking, and Kayla has made it clear to Paris that she does not want her to go for the triple. She would not put Paris up. She wants to keep Paris, that Paris would be safe with her and Derek. And you know, if it all comes down to, does Paris believe Kayla with that? And to be honest, I don't know if Kayla would come after Paris or not for the triple. I don't believe she would go after Paris for the triple, but you know, it's hard to tell. But honestly, that's where Paris is going to change her mind or not change her mind. Does she believe that Kayla will be good for her game? Overall, it probably might not be the best for Paris to keep Kayla if Kayla's lying to Paris. But if Kayla's telling the truth, then maybe it is good for Paris to keep Kayla. So honestly, I don't even know, because I don't know if Kayla is telling the truth to Paris or not.
Mm. Do you think that if she did this, would this help or hurt her? Not even just from a daylight perspective, but overall, when it comes to a triple eviction, could it be this idea where she accidentally stumbled into a strategy where she put two meat shields in front of herself so that if it was the three of them on the block, you know, she clearly would be the one to stay?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think that this could end up being great for her game to keep Kayla. Absolutely. But it could also be really bad for her game. So I can see why Paris is having such a hard time deciding. But you know what? I love that about Paris, because I felt like for the past few seasons on Big Brother, we haven't really had a lot of players who are willing to do whatever it takes, depending on the week. And and normally it's like, oh, well, this person's been in my alliance this whole time. Like, I'm going to stick with them. And they kind of just like play the safe route and they stick the whole way, the whole time with the same people. And Paris is great about, you don't know what she's going to do. She's going to do whatever she feels like is best for her game at that point in time. And that could be anything. It could be with Kayla or Derek one week. It could be with Will and Maddie the next week. It could be with Johnny one week. You really don't know. And I like the fact that she's so versatile and the fact that she's willing to just go from person to person and group to group as long as it gets her further in the game. And I love seeing that.
Melissa, does Johnny have his thumb on the scale one way or the other in terms of who he wants to see go out this week?
I believe Johnny wants Kayla to go. I mean, initially, he did not want Kayla to go and was really everyone was really upset when Derek won, including myself, because I really want Kayla to stay. And I really didn't care really that much if Derek stayed or left or whatever. So I was kind of hoping.
Don't piss off all the Derek stands.
Oh, sorry, guys. I'm so sorry. Derek might be a very great guy, but, you know. Well,
can I ask one question? Was Derek barefoot at the nomination ceremony with his disgusting bare feet on the coffee table, Mike?
Well, Andrew did like shade him by saying change your socks. So he's like, you know what, Andrew? Great. I'm not going to wear socks at all. Screw you, Cosby sweater.
He's like, all my socks are dirty. I'll just go barefoot.
Yeah, it's that perfect sense. Theme. Like, can't have dirty socks if you're barefoot.
Please. Perfect. Maybe that wear shoes to the nomination ceremony, please.
Yeah, well, maybe he didn't want to, maybe he anticipated an Austin-like exit, and he wanted to walk out barefoot just like his idol.
Mm-hmm. Instant eviction, okay. All right, let's, I'm intrigued, what does Scott have? This is Joe Lewis, this is I think that Scott was saying that this predates Ding Dongs in Canada, so I don't know if they have Ding Dongs in Canada officially.
So only should we call the alliance Joe's Louie?
Yeah.
Joe's Louie's?
Yeah. Okay. There you go. All right.
There's a New Zealand survivor contestant who spells her name J-O-S-C, but she goes by Yos. So maybe it's Yos Louie?
Yos. Okay. This is a question. Stacked in Florida. Cody was deadpan and got plenty of screen time. Why not Johnny? Well, Johnny's not trying to do deadpan. That Johnny, I just think that is... I don't want to say is his strategy is off the charts.
Yeah.
If you can't see,
as a comedian, Johnny is a fantastic strategist.
He's just maybe more mild mannered in the diary room than other people. Mm-hmm. And that might be why. And also, like, that's Big Brother US and not Big Brother Canada. So I don't know if we can really compare them in terms of diary rooms, but I guess they're vaguely similar.
Yeah, I would say that the closest, I think you made this before, Rob, but I think the closest comparison to a Cody Nixon is probably Olivia, who I, from a personality perspective, love on this show. I don't know what it is. She reminds me of like a bit of Jen Johnson combined with, this is a bit of an international reality show stretch, Michelle from Australian Survivor 2017. Like, that's the mashup I'm getting. But every time she's on screen, to the point where after the nomination ceremony, I don't know if you saw it, but the very last shot of the episode was her checking herself out in the mirror before going back. It's just, I don't know. I love getting to watch her. She's a fantastic character.
Okay.
Olivia's great. And not only is she a good character, I actually think she's a really good strategist. I think that she is able to work certain people and also work her strengths in that she isn't trying to be something that she's not. I think that she's, but at the same time, she has really good ideas and really good ways of subtly getting those ideas across to people. And I think especially with Johnny, because her and Johnny have gotten very close this week. I think that, and I mean, not just to credit Olivia for that, for sure to credit Johnny for that as well, because Johnny has really separated Liv and Allie this week, which has been really crazy to see, considering that they were so close, literally just a few days ago, and now all of a sudden it's basically Johnny and Olivia as a twosome.
Well, so I want to ask you a question, which is sort of the inverse of what we're talking about with Johnny. Why has the show gone to such great lengths to really prop up Allie? Do you feel like that Allie really delivers in the diary room?
I guess they think so. I mean, it's hard to say, because for me, delivering in the diary room is not just like yelling like catchphrases, but apparently that's the way it is for production. But Allie at the same time does deliver a lot on the feeds in regards to she's not afraid to get confrontational with people like she did with Ryan. And she's pretty funny and she's loud. And so I could see why they might like her. But yeah, I honestly don't know why they're really focusing on her. But at the same time, I don't know why they focused on Will for so long the first couple weeks. So I guess I just don't see eye to eye with production on what the characters are.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotta be honest. I did not love the 15 minutes on Will screeching on Thursday night. I'm sorry, Melissa. I know you were a fan.
Is he a podcaster?
I'm not a fan of the 15 minutes of it. I'm a fan of it, like, in a small dose. I thought it was fun.
I just feel like that they built this catacomb, Mike, and it's like, all right, here we go. All season long. And I know they mentioned his secret veto, but why? But what an anticlimactic reveal to have this thing built into the house that's going to open up at some point. And, you know, it's going to be, okay, this is going to be some game changing power. And it's freaking Marsha the Moose and
Marsha the Mummy.
And hey, here's a prank, or here's a, you have a challenge. And then everybody else is also getting a challenge to then try to throw him off. It was just, what a waste of something that could have been cool.
But to be fair, would we rather have Will gotten a secret veto? I don't think so. Or well, at least I would not want Will to get a secret veto.
Right. Right. But I mean, they could have done something cool or fun with that. It doesn't have to be a veto. Like, we've seen Survivor play around with this. So like, but what about like an extra vote or something that would have been interesting to put in there? That wouldn't have been a real game changing twist. But what, or a, like what a waste. What a waste, like on eviction night.
Provide one of those like choices of, you know, hey, you can take this power to cancel an eviction vote, but in exchange, like, you put half the house on slot personally or something like that, you know, like Marsha's catacombs. Though, I mean, I do love me
Marsha's fine. Marsha. Nothing against Marsha, but what a waste to put my, like, Marsha's in the hallway. You don't need to build a secret catacomb to hide Marsha the Moose, like the Ark of the Covenant.
They definitely could have done something else with it. And especially if they're going to have another big twist coming up. I don't know if they are, but if they are going to have another big twist and they've already used the catacomb, like that's a waste. They really should have done something better with it.
Okay. Bill Hall wants to know, we had two triples in BB Can history. The veto was used each time. Do you think the pattern will hold? Is the triple so volatile a power like the veto will always be used? Small sample size, but Melissa, do you feel like that the veto will certainly be used on Thursday night?
Yeah, I mean, I believe the veto will be used because, first of all, the people who are on the block are going to be trying way harder for it. So obviously they're going to want to use the veto. And then also there's so few people now that there's guaranteed to be at least one of your allies probably on the block. Mm-hmm. So you probably are going to want to use the veto on somebody. So yeah. I don't really see a situation where nobody uses the veto unless maybe a triple is up there. So maybe if Paris, Will, and Maddie were on the block, and then maybe Derek won veto or something like that, where
wouldn't you think Derek would like take Will down or something weird like that if Kayla's gone?
I don't maybe see vice him versa, doing that.
Like where Paris wins the HOH and then like a Maddie or Will wins the veto and they want to keep it the same.
Yeah, like there are situations where it's not going to be used, but the odds are it's going to be used.
Three people are on the block, six people are playing. It's a 50-50 chance that somebody, and it's only happened twice before. So it's a good chance.
And also the fact that since this is done instantly, I feel like when you're sort of put on the spot, you're probably more likely to do something rather than not and sit on it just because you have that spur of the moment reaction. Granted, it's a pretty far stretch to do something like what Bruno did and just randomly save Zach out of nowhere. But I think it's a good chance that, as you said, especially since everyone's so entrenched with their connections to one another, if your partner or your trio partner, triartner is on the block, there's a good chance that they're going to be used and get taken off.
Yeah, and plus there's not enough time to talk with people beforehand and guarantee like, okay, this is the person we're saving, right? Or this is the people that are going home. You don't have that opportunity, so you can't really risk, let's hope they all just keep my ally. You've got to use it.
Okay. just to go back to the catacomb again, like, isn't the theme of the season heaven and hell? Like, isn't that supposed to be like the pits of hell, Melissa? And Marsha the Moose is hiding down there trying to get people to kiss a fish in like a prank competition.
You're really stuck on this, the fact that there's a moose down there. That's what's confusing you.
From the way you're talking about this, though, is this not the pure definition of the ninth circle of hell?
I guess so.
Something built up from a reality TV standard, only for it to completely fizzle out in a prank where they have to kiss a fish and wear a Gordon's fisherman hat.
I just want things to make sense. Okay. I want to circle back to and then we'll wrap up after this because I have a flight in like 9 hours. So the butterfly of death, Mike. So does the butterfly goes into a cocoon and then you die? Was the butterfly dead or was Johnny a worm and then he died and then he became the butterfly of death? Does the butterfly of death land on people and then they die?
I mean, I would say that I feel like the butterfly like rains down upon you. I'm imagining like this giant butterfly.
It's like Silence of the Lambs and they put a butterfly in your mouth when you die.
Yeah, and then you land in a big pit, and that's the catacombs, and they have to lower down buckets of slop to you when you're in half.
So Johnny is Buffalo Bob?
I'm the butterfly of death. I didn't think it's actually like a butterfly died. I think it's more so he was in a cocoon and then he burst out and now he's ready to, maybe he got possessed along the way, but I think it's more so him serving as an agent of death rather than him actually representing, you know, I am dead and now I'm a zombie, even though he did, again, mix metaphors, make reference to him coming back from the dead. So that sort of can confuse things as well.
Because you float like a butterfly, but you sting like a bee. If he was the bee of death, I would get that, Melissa.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like it's better to not read too much into it because it really doesn't make a lot of sense.
That's what I do. I get caught up about things and I want to talk about them.
Caught like a butterfly in a net.
That's why I use my wife I spent 6 years talking to her about things like this. And she was like, I can't anymore. Start a podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, this is what we're all here for. We want to talk about the butterfly of death and the fact that we think it's, or at least I think it's the cocoon. And then he comes out, he bursts from the cocoon after he's saved from that eviction. And now he's HOH and he's going to rain terror on everyone.
Okay.
As like, butterflies of death do.
Yeah, like I would say compared to like Mothra, you know, so we truly need like now Godzilla. Which Will is probably tall enough to be Godzilla to come in and take him down, which, to be honest, you know, when it's coming to the triple eviction, that the butterfly of death might not have a fantastically long lifestyle, yeah. A life cycle.
Yeah, seriously. And I'm very worried for Johnny for the triple.
Yeah. Susan Swan brings up a good question. Would you rather fight one butterfly of death or would you rather keep your relationship with butterflies of death as it is or go back to how things were without this?
I feel like I like my current
relationship. The mosquito of death would be terrifying.
Pretty sure that's a sci-fi movie.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Starring Shiza Minnelli.
So yes, that's coming like Sharknado.
Shiza Minnelli.
Okay. Butterfly of death starring Shiza Minnelli.
All right. So what did we learn here tonight? Johnny is really great at Big Brother. That he's done way more in the house than anybody else. But he's not good in the diary room and production doesn't like him for some reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's essentially.
Yeah. And then he probably only has 2 episodes to improve on that reputation because chances are he will probably be one of the people walking out the door at the tail end of Thursday.
All right. Well, let's go here. Let's Melissa, what do you think? Because it didn't say Taryn didn't make it sound like that was as likely at this point. So for Johnny, is he going home on Thursday, Melissa?
I think he's most in danger on Thursday.
Yeah.
At this point.
OK. Mike. What do you think? Yes or no? Is Johnny going home? Melissa was a little fancy fencerton right there.
I'll take, anyone listens to the B&B knows I'm extremely wrong with my predictions. So you might refer to Leon.
No Matt Liguori.
I know I'm no Matt Liguori. My DMs do not span the length of an ancient tome, but I'm going to say yes, because triple evictions are always very screwy. So I could see him going out with like, I honestly see either him or Derek winning veto. Mm-hmm. And then the other person ends up going home with probably one member of the trio.
I'll say he doesn't. I say he figures it out. He's gotten out of every other jam so far this season. And I feel like that he goes on to win. I think that the show has I think they can pull out of the nosedive if they go on to, you know, Johnny has a run to the end of the season and then they give you Johnny as there's less people and tell that story. But I think if Johnny goes out here and then we end up like there is a lot of unfavorable outcomes for this season with a lot of players mm-hmm. that you get to the end. You still got Derek. You've still got Will. You've still got Maddie in the mix mm-hmm. there. I mean, this could be looking Big Brother Canada 4-ish very easily here at the end, Melissa.
Oh boy. Yeah, I'm very worried about that. I feel like Will is someone we should have gotten out a long time ago. And I feel like then Derek and... That would be nice.
There's a lot of variance here, Mike. I mean, this could go down as like a really great season, or this could be the worst Big Brother Canada season.
I mean, to be fair, I know that some people, including your guest last week, took some umbrage with the fact that like, oh, the big characters are gone and there are boring people left. But I enjoy it. Maybe it's because I like watching people who are self-interested and behaving in a way that is trying to get them to win the game, because it's weird to say, but let's just say in the past year, when it comes to North American Big Brother seasons, there are players and mentalities that have not necessarily worked towards that. So I'm happy that we're sort of at least getting back to that. It's been fun to watch these dynamics sort of come together. I can understand with what, you know, everyone's been saying about how it's a little bit harder to storytell. It's almost like something akin to like Survivor Cambodia, where things were changing every episode, that it was a little tough to tell a cohesive narrative. But I'm really enjoying this cast overall. That being said, I have no idea how it's going to end, but it should be an interesting ride, to say the least. We've only got 3 weeks left of this shindig.
Okay. All right. Great stuff. Mike Blue, what's the hashtag tonight?
Oh, boy. I mean, Butterfly of Death is a good one. I mean, I feel like it's got to be Butterfly of Death. And I had BB Webster. I had Jungle Johnny. But I feel like because we flapped so much around that honeypot, we need to like stick in our proboscis and get that sweet, sweet hashtag nectar.
What, Mike?
How do you just like know these words off the top of your head?
I had a bug book that I studied religiously when I was like 8 years old. I didn't have I didn't go outside. I just studied bugs that ironically inside of my house. So,
oh, good.
Okay. All right.
Very useful in this exact situation right here.
It prepared me for some hip hop dance. So it really wasn't an all in one.
You've led a crazy life.
Okay. Let's talk about what's coming up. Okay. Tomorrow morning, join Taryn once again, Tuesday, April 24th, that the Iron Man is not missing any of these days, no matter what happens to him physically. He is there day in and day la. And so the LFC roundtable is also going to be back on Tuesday night. Be sure to join. What's that? 8:30 Eastern, Melissa?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. 5:30 Pacific.
All right. The stock watch will be active and trading, and some interesting decisions to be made with Kayla and Allie on the block. And then live from Boston, Massachusetts, the Survivor Know-It-Alls should be live and streaming, barring a technological visit from the Butterfly of Death. We will be ready to go after this week's Survivor at 9:00 Eastern. We do those again. Usually it takes us a couple minutes to set up for the live for the Skype shows, but we should be live right after the episode coming up on Wednesday night. I'm laughing that I have a text message from Matt Ligori, who's texting me. I have receipts. So again, those long CVS style receipts from Matt Ligori. All right. And then finally, want more Rob is a podcast. Who wouldn't after this episode tonight? robisawebsite.com/patron. We've got patron only shows, everything going on in the Rob's Podcast Facebook groups, our Big Brother Facebook groups, the Rahapisodes, much more. A lot of people ask me, hey, I wanted to come to the show in Boston. How come I didn't find out about it? Well, probably we're not a patron of Rob's Podcast. People say, how come I didn't find out? If only there was some way that people could have got the inside track on where all the events are going to be to buy up all the tickets. That would be great. All right. So, Mike Blum, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to catch up with you, Mike.
Yeah, so happy to come on. Thanks so much for talking through this. I mean, this was one of my favorite Big Brother Canada episodes left. So we definitely got
a good one tonight. We got a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun. I feel very unlucky for the audience that had to watch this rat's nest on my head, but I had a lot of fun regardless.
Yes. All right. And Melissa, always fun to catch up with you as well. Melissa, mm-hmm. Stacked in Florida was lamenting that I believe both Kayla and Allie are on your draft team. Is that correct?
No, it is incorrect. Okay. Because Ooh. Allie is not on my draft. I currently have Kayla and Olivia left.
Stack said, correct me if I'm wrong. And Melissa said, I will correct you because you're wrong.
I will correct you.
Okay. All right. And thanks so much, Scott St. Pierre, putting everything together tonight. All right. Have a good one, everybody. And then I will talk to you from Boston Wednesday night. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.